morning, everybody, and welcome to WJTN and the Times of Your Life. I'm Andrew Hill.
I'm Russ Diedrich.
And Russ, it's good to be in the studio today with two bright faces that we'll introduce in just a moment. First off, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Got a lot of great response from our show last week with Jim Mathis.
Yes, that was a great time.
People were very interested to hear his story, and I had some people say, well, how can I hear that again? I said, you can hear our shows on our website. Go to WJTN.com. And we have the podcasts, and that way anybody that is around the world that wants to hear any of our past shows can listen to it live on the website or download it as a podcast and have it forever.
Wow.
So, and in fact,
how far back can they go?
Right now they can go back since we've been back since the pandemic, but I'm working on, as soon as I get an intern, anybody interested, call me, to start getting our older stuff on. And actually, we'll get to our guests in a second, but I'm excited because I had one of our listeners contact me. Her brother was Steve Carlson when we had Carlson Lillery on the air, and that was a couple years ago. She said, "Can you, by chance, do you still have that show? Can you make me some CD copies?" I said, "Of course I will." So 10 CD copies are waiting at the front desk, but I listened to the show, and I was like, man, these shows don't get old.
No.
It's fantastic. So, all right. Now that I got through all that, Randy Anderson from the Chautauqua County Sports Hall of Fame, not a stranger to the airwaves of WJTN. Good morning and welcome to the Times of Your Life.
Good morning, Andrew. Good morning, Russ. Thank you for inviting us today.
Absolutely. And you say us because introduce who you have brought, who is going to be a member of the class of 2022 at the Sports Hall of Fame.
Well, I'm very happy to have with me today Christina Keyboard. She's an inductee of our class of 2022. And today's show will be devoted to understanding what she's accomplished in her life. It's an amazing story.
Christina, good morning and welcome to the Times of Your Life.
Good morning and thank you.
Now, I love the fact that, you know, we've done this program before. We've had, you know, numerous inductees. And I'm going to take full advantage, Christina, of having you for the next 50 minutes because I don't know anything about karate or martial arts. And I will tell you, 95% of our audience wants to know, what is the difference between a black belt, blue belt, yellow belt, red belt? So I'm just prepping you. Get ready. But let's start first off. Tell us about the experience. What was it like for you when you got the call that you were being inducted into the Hall of Fame? How did that work? Do you remember when you found out?
Was it a call or was it a letter?
Oh, it was a letter?
I think it was both. Okay. Actually, yeah, I do remember getting a call and then a letter on top of it. And honestly, I was excited because, I mean, it helps fulfill a family promise.
Family promise. Tell us more about that.
Well, I made a promise to my family that I try to immortalize our name somehow because there was a lot of times my family name was kind of frowned upon because of my family history with my parents and everything being disabled.
Oh, okay.
So my brother having mental illness and everything, so I wanted to make our family name memorable.
Wow.
Wow.
That's something. Now, is this the same brother that you had donated a kidney to?
I didn't donate a kidney to my brother. I donated in his memory to a complete stranger at the time.
Wow. Well, we'll go back to, let's dive into that now. How did that come up?
My brother was diagnosed with renal failure some years ago, and it actually took his life. Mm-hmm. So I was happening to be on Facebook, and I saw a Facebook page called Team Lillian, and I went on it and just kind of did some research, and I'm like, okay, it doesn't hurt to get tested or figure out if I'm a match or anything. Sure. So I went about, you know, contacting the page and all that and seeing how I could get tested since I didn't live in New York City. And WCA was really good at letting me do some things out here. And then it turned out I was a 3-for-3 match.
Wow.
So not being family, I was able to, you know, match up pretty good. And I just, you know, I felt good about it. So I just went for it.
Really? How long after had you found out you were a match did you actually decide and commit to it?
I already committed like from day one. If I was going to be okay with it and it was a match and everything, you know, the way I looked at it, if I could help a family not go through what I went through with my brother, yeah, I'm just going to shoot for it.
Wow.
So we finally got it scheduled to do it on my brother's, what would have been his 40th birthday.
Holy cow. Was that like purposely done that day or just happened to be where the stars
aligned? I pushed it for that.
Wow.
So I wanted to honor him on his 40th birthday. And actually next month on the 13th of March, it'll be 4 years.
Wow. What a great story.
Christina, where did this operation take place?
It actually took place at Mount Sinai in New York, Manhattan.
How long is the recovery period after that surgery?
I had to be out of work for a couple of months and everything because it was painful. But, you know, I mean, they had me on medications that I had to be careful taking and everything too. But I felt like I was superwoman at the time because of what they had me on. And then after that wore off, it was like, nope, you're not superwoman, you know.
Do you have any communication with the patient?
Actually, yes, I do. I am still in communication with her and her family, and she's still doing very well.
Awesome. That is so cool.
And the funny part is she just tried to FaceTime me the other day. Wow. So, but I was at work.
What was her background, Christina? Why did she need a kidney?
I'm not 100% sure if I'm allowed to discuss that.
Okay. Good.
All right. So you made a mention about being Superwoman. All right. So now we've talked about, you know, one of life's stories. Let's go back to, you know, the beginning again. And tell us about how you got into martial arts at a young age, I understand.
Well, I started training with my uncle when I was about 5 years old. My brother and I, we were in a family situation where my mom was completely blind. And my dad, he suffered a brain injury at a very young age. So the kids back when we used to live in Rochester used to pick on my brother and I. Mm-hmm. You know, they would put like the word blind bat on our apartment, you know, with spray paint. Yeah. They would call us white trash, throw us in the big old garbage dumpsters and the whole bit. So my uncle, when he would be, you know, visiting and all that, would teach my brother and I some things just to defend against the bullies.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay. And then as a young kid, I didn't understand what martial arts was about. Mm-hmm. You know, that was for self-defense. Yeah. All I knew is I was allowed to kick and punch somebody and not get in trouble. You know, and especially, you know, like my brother being there too. Whenever he got me in trouble, I could. It sounds bad now. I'm sorry, Bill, but right. I could get him back in certain ways.
Sure, sure.
You know, without getting in trouble. So it was fun.
Who was your first enemy that you punched and kicked? And what did he think about some pretty little girl kicking me and punching me?
To be honest with you, I don't remember names back then, but there were times I stood up to some of the bullies. So, because, I mean, they were older than us. Because we used to live in an apartment complex behind Selfie Towers in Rochester, and they were just older kids in the neighborhood. Yeah. So I don't know names.
No, at the age of five, do you actually remember? I mean, because I have flashes of things I might remember at the age of five. But do you actually remember the? I don't want to talk about the negative parts about the you know the PTSD type of situations, but the actual training at 5 years old. Do you remember your uncle like actually teaching you?
I remember some things that he taught me. You know, I mean, I remember like you know how to properly hold your fist tight, and you know that you not. Have your thumb on the inside because you could break it when you hit.
Yep.
I remember, you know, him showing the proper way of holding your knuckles and all that, proper way of picking up your knee and kicking and, you know, how to keep your balance. I remember a lot of that.
Yeah.
You know, but of course, it got reinforced later on in years with other instructors, so it kind of brought it all back.
Yeah. So, all right, so your uncle teaches you the basics. And then what happened? What was the day, if you can remember, where you said, I want to do this, like, professionally, or at least do this more seriously?
It got to the point that it was a passion of his because he learned it when he was in the military.
Okay.
And it got to the point that I don't know if it was just something that it was like my connection to my Uncle Bill, you know, but it was like, okay, I really enjoy this. I'm now starting to understand the concept behind it. It's for self-defense, for, you know, a person's well-being, you know, to learn self-control. Mm-hmm. I mean, it definitely helps when you get frustrated to calm yourself down using some of the techniques.
Sure.
So it just, I don't know. It was just like maybe something that he somehow put into my heart to continue on.
Well, God bless him because, I mean, look at all this time later. You're being inducted into the Chautauqua Sports Hall of Fame this year.
Where did your uncle get the interest in it and the ability?
He was with the 82nd Airborne during Vietnam. Hmm. So I know he learned some through the military, and that's some of it is what he passed on to my brother and I, a little bit of that.
So when did you start competing? Do you remember?
I remember competing my first time when I was six, vaguely, with my Uncle Bill. It was some small little thing out in Rochester. I also remember throwing up on the center referee. Probably shouldn't have said that, but anyway.
No, what's his name? No.
I don't know. I just remember being so nervous and everything, and I've shared this with my students, so I guess, whatever, public-wide now.
Oh, yeah.
But I was in the ring. I was scared. My stomach was like, I wanted just to go home.
Uh-huh.
And my uncle just kept giving me the thumbs up. And I'm starting to do my introduction, and there's this gentleman in front of me, and it just happened. And then I'm standing there like, oh my gosh, am I going to be in trouble?
Right,
and he
right.
just called somebody over to clean it up and asked me if I was okay, and we continued.
That is so funny.
Now, when you have competition, is it male and female competition, or is it just female?
It's depending on the tournament and depending on what rank you are.
Mm-hmm.
Because some tournaments, you know, if you're a black belt, they try to do it by gender because to keep it fair. But depending on how ranked you are, like I hold an eighth degree black, I'm up in the like senior master division areas. So there's not always females that can compete at that bracket because there's not females that high. So sometimes it's male. Mm-hmm. It all depends on the tournament and, you know, the ranking of a student.
Is there competition? I remember there was a lot of men and others and kids in my time. They had no belt. They all wore suspenders. So
we have belts now. Not suspenders. I've never seen that, but anyway.
So take us through, because I said we were going to do it, the belts. When somebody starts, what are they wearing?
Well, it depends on the system, too.
Okay.
In my system, Shotokan Karate, we begin as white belt level, okay. and then they progress to yellow, then there's blue. Green is kind of like the, you know, intermediate area, you know. Then there's purple and three levels of brown. Then they get to first degree black.
Okay. Now, so you get to the different levels of black?
Yes.
Okay. So how many different levels are there in black belt?
It depends on the system again.
Okay.
Some systems, they only have up to fifth degree black.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm currently eighth on in Shotokan.
Uh-huh.
And my instructor's ninth degree. So it depends on whatever system you're involved in.
So what are the systems?
On how many
you
degrees.
Keep saying system. Like, are these like different leagues or?
There's different forms of martial arts. You
okay.
have Shotokan, you have Taekwondo, you have Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, you know, there's different arts within the martial arts system.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, there's Kenpo, there's, you know, I mean, tons of, so each style has its own ranking system and how far they progress.
And how many different systems are you have been involved with?
I've studied Kenpo Karate a little bit with Dan Genovese. I currently, you know, have the rank of eighth degree in Shotokan through Rick Johnson. With my uncle, he always said it was soprano kickboxing, but I'm not 100% sure what that ever meant. I know we focused a lot on kicking.
Have you ever thought about kickboxing yourself?
Personally, I like what I do. I like being well-rounded in my system.
Could you define what Shotokan Karate is?
Shotokan is a Japanese hard style that started back a long time ago with Gishin Funakoshi as the founder. So that's what Shotokan is. It's we work more with hands and feet, and we teach about self-control and discipline, and that the whole point of being in martial arts is to, if you have the opportunity that you have to come against an attacker, is to use as little force as possible to subdue and get away.
Mm-hmm.
Your ultimate goal is not to actually cause harm to somebody, even if they're a bad guy or not.
Well, I see in the article that you put together, the Hall of Fame is nothing really kind of new to you. You've been in a lot of other ones. Have you ever thought about getting on the pathway to the Olympics?
With my age and all that, and I've had multiple injuries with the Olympics, I mean, the Olympics focuses, I think, if I'm not mistaken, that there's a lot of, like, judo competition and taekwondo, and I don't do either or.
Is that more of, like, the showy type of...
Taekwondo is more considered, if I'm not mistaken, the art of kicking.
Uh-huh.
So they focus more on kicking than they do anything else.
Yeah.
And judo is basically using somebody's body weight and throwing them around.
For those that don't know anything, we learn everything there is about martial arts and, you know, karate and kicking and hitting and self-defense from Hollywood. So I have to say, Cobra Kai is a huge series right now on Netflix. It's come back for the Karate Kid. You know, we met, Karate Kid, you know, back in the 1980s. And tell us about, I mean, Hollywood and the movies. What's real? What's not real? I mean, if we want to see what exactly your world's like, is there something in Hollywood we can reference that you say, that's it? That's it.
Well, to be honest, I'm a big fan of Cobra Kai.
Yeah, yeah. It's a great show.
No, I mean, more Miyagi-Do.
Yeah, of course.
You know,
of course.
But I do watch Cobra Kai a lot, and Miyagi-Do more focuses on the fact that it is only strictly for self-defense,
right,
and to calm oneself down and to only use it when you have no choice.
Right.
Now, if you look at the Cobra Kai with Kreese and everybody else, it's more that it's for intimidation, bullying, you know, strike first, strike hard, no mercy type thing.
Yeah.
That's not at all what it's truly focused on.
So that's Hollywood's interpretation.
That's Hollywood's. Okay. Well, I mean, you got the good guys and you got the bad guys in Hollywood, you know?
Yeah, because Mr. Miyagi, his, I mean, like I said, I mean, today's world, I mean, that's where they think of karate. They think of Mr. Miyagi and on the beach, on the pole, doing the crane kick things like that. So wax on, wax off. So but you're telling it, there's much more to that. And at an early age, what's the training like? I mean, is it just you're on the mats and the repetitive motions? I mean, what's training like for your tenure in doing this?
There's multiple things involved. I mean, yes, you practice on the mats and you practice different things. Like, you know, you could have a kata, which is like an arranged series of movements. It kind of looks like a dance routine, but it's all martial arts related techniques. And you know, there's times where you repeat it over and over again, so it becomes instinctive. You know, we have different Kihon basics, which are self-defense techniques, and we repeat it over and over again, so it becomes instinctive. So there's a lot of things that are repetitive, so that way when you're in a real situation, you can perform it without having any second thought if you have to defend yourself.
Right.
But there's also discipline involved where, you know, okay, we learn after, you know, you get advanced up in rank that there's one technique that you learn as a white belt. Yes, it can cause something, you know, to be serious with an injury, but you learn more when you get higher up how to pull your punches or your kicks so you're not causing a lot of injury. Mm. You know, because that's the ultimate goal is we might have to defend ourselves, but we don't want to severely hurt the other person.
Right.
You see, there's a lot of young ears listening to this program this morning, and they're going to be excited about what you're talking about. If one of them had an interest and they called you, what would you tell them to do? How would you tell them to get started?
Well, currently right now, I teach martial arts at the local YMCA, so they're always welcome to come to my program. My instructor is from Warren, PA. You know, he has a dojo out there. His name is Rick Johnson, so you can always contact him. And there's tons of different martial arts schools around the area. You know, I mean, it depends on where you're from and everything and what type you're trying to look into. I am very traditional. I am not sport karate. I don't do the MMA or anything like that. So if that's something you want to look forward to, I'm not the one to go to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I literally stick with traditional karate because I'm one that believes in the true fundamentals that it's for, you know, just self-defense and things like that. And I don't like just thinking about somebody just beating the bejeebies out of somebody else.
Do you find that the young people that Russ is talking about, I mean, what are they, like single digits? Are they teenagers, young adults? I mean, is this one of those sports that somebody can get into and benefit from at any age?
Yeah. The oldest student I ever had was close to 70 years old, and he had a brain injury.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's constantly wanted to do martial arts. I was in contact with him through the, if I'm not mistaken, it was the resource center that contacted me. Mm-hmm. He was always turned down because of his mental illness.
Yeah.
And I gave him a shot.
Yeah.
We worked on his endurance, his coordination. It was repetitive over and over again because he did have memory issues.
Right.
But the staff there noticed an improvement with his, you know, fundamentals and everything. And his doctor noticed it. So, I mean, it turned out, I'm not sure if I could say his name or not. Right. So, but I still have contact with him every once in a while because I want to make sure, you know, he knows that I'm still there.
That's sweet.
And I call him to wish him happy birthday and stuff like that.
Wow.
Randy, are there any other Hall of Famers that have been inducted through this?
We have one other martial artist in our Chautauqua Sports Hall of Fame. His name is Mark Weaver. But Christina is our first female martial artist.
Well, congratulations.
That's fantastic. Now, I understand, I mean, if you look at your resume, there's all these decorations you've had from previous, or, you know, all these tournaments and competitions. Where's the farthest you've traveled around this globe to compete? Has this all been on the U.S. soil, or have you been able to go in other places?
The majority, yeah, it's always been on U.S. soil.
Okay. So is it the type of thing where it's invitationals So are you raising your money, saving every penny to be able to go to these, or are they inviting you, you know, to come out on their dime to compete in tournaments like this?
That would be nice, actually. But majority of it is invitational, and I pay my own way. And sometimes when you do really well, you can continue on to another tournament and another event. But when you're paying out of your own pocket, and every once in a while I was blessed to have like my school step up and help sponsor, you know, thank you, Love School. I love you guys, you know, some church friends, you know, and all that. But there's a lot of times where when it's out of pocket, it gets too expensive.
Sure.
And you can't always continue on when it's like month to month to month.
Right.
Christina, is this a sport that is available and goes on in almost every country?
I know that there's a lot of martial arts in different countries. I mean, you know, Japan, I mean, come on. They focus most of the time on, you know, certain fields of martial arts and certain styles. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it depends on where you live and everything, in what country or state or anything. There's always something you can probably get yourself into.
I think as a amount of gray hair I have, I can remember as a kid, I heard more of that coming out of Japan during World War II. A lot of our combat guys, you know, run into that. And it was something that was very exciting. I had to have that and wonder always what it was all about. And
well, your uncle, you said he learned some of this while he was in Vietnam in the military. So is that something that they were teaching on, on, to piggyback on Russ's point, do you know?
Well, I'm not 100% sure because my uncle didn't talk too much about his military service. Yep. You know, I mean, he seemed like he suffered from PTSD, but that wasn't common back then, you know?
Yeah.
But I know that majority of the time, because I have other people that I know that were students and all that, that served in the military branches, they do teach like hand-to-hand combat, you know, like martial arts training.
Yeah.
You know? And all I remember is my uncle telling us that his was kind of like kickboxing and some other things mixed in that he learned when he was stationed around the areas and all that where he was, you know, at.
Sure.
So he kind of put the name like Soprano Kickboxing together.
Right, right.
So all I remember is like the hard kicks and everything. And
yeah.
Some things I didn't like back then as a little
Randy,
kid.
Randy, with all your past experience in coaching in the school and in the schools, did you ever run into it in the gym classes or anything?
No, wow. Not at all.
That's interesting.
And I assume it's because none of the phys ed teachers in the schools would have had the necessary background.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that'd probably be the worst thing you could do, attempt to teach someone.
No, I know back in the 50s, we had boxing in the gym.
Yeah.
And that was because of Joe Polino and those guys who were boxing the golden gloves and stuff. So,
I wanted to ask Christina, you talked about early in your life, you were in Rochester. So what brought you to Jamestown and how did your career move on?
Well, I'm from Rochester. I was born in Rochester. My brother and I both were. We moved from Rochester to Jamestown due to family circumstances.
Okay.
Jamestown's lucky it happened.
Thanks.
And then what opportunities did you have to pursue the sport once you were here in Jamestown?
When I was in middle school, I met Dan Genovese, who was the guidance counselor at Washington Middle School at the time. And he was a black belt in Kempo Karate.
Wow.
So he started up, you know, an after-school program. So I got involved with that for a little bit. And he introduced me to Rick Johnson. So so I started training with Rick Johnson. And
just from there.
I mean, that's who is my current instructor right now is Rick Johnson.
Wow.
No, I have a brown belt. I'm going to go home.
Is it leather?
Brown leather belt.
I'm going home after this and changing it. I'm changing the color. Can I claim that I'm a black belter?
You need one of those flip ones that I have. Yeah. You flip it, one side's brown, one side's black. I'm not
no white belts?
Yeah, no.
Well, in order to claim your black belt, majority of the time you have to have certification.
Oh, boy.
So,
did you ever think about getting into the officiating part of it? I mean, to be near the sport, but also be paid to do it? And
I do, you know, when I compete and all that, I do volunteer to ref.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's got to be tough in this sport.
It's entertaining because if a parent or a coach, you know, like what's normally a black belt instructor or whatever, doesn't like a call, sometimes you have to really stand firm if you see something that, you know, is not allowed to happen at the tournament or the event.
Oh, what would that be that's not allowed?
Like excessive contact, You know, in certain divisions, you're not allowed to have excessive contact to another opponent where you draw blood or you cause, you know, injury. Mm-hmm. So that could be an automatic disqualification.
Regardless if it's, if it's intentional or not.
Well, it, you know,
or is,
some,
that, is that a judgment call?
It's normally a judgment call because sometimes you can have a competitor too, kind of like if they're losing on points, they'll walk into another opponent's attack to try to get that person disqualified.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
You know, and I've seen that happen multiple times because it's like, okay, well, if they're disqualified now, I got the automatic win.
Right.
So a lot of times it's a judgment call and you really got to stand firm when you do it. Mm-hmm. So, because there's a lot of unhappy people when that happens sometimes.
Oh, I imagine. Randy, in the Hall of Fame, to be inducted in the Hall of Fame, you've got to be born in, lived in, or achieved in Chautauqua County.
Yeah.
And somebody else has to nominate you.
Uh-huh.
What was the process for this young lady to appear?
Well again, we received nominations from the public.
Mm-hmm.
Christina is certainly eligible, although she wasn't born in Chautauqua County. She has lived in Chautauqua County.
Long time.
She's showing me
since I was seven.
Since she was seven, and she's a young 40-ish right now, I would guess.
I'm sorry, I'll be 45, but thank you.
Okay.
I'll take what you said though.
She's lived in the majority of her life.
But with that information,
county. That made her eligible.
And a lot of background material had to come for the.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, what's the judging process once you get a nomination?
Well, first of all, we have to receive the file and to make sure it's a complete file, meaning does it have enough documentation to substantiate the claims that are made. In other words, Christina is an eighth degree black belt. Mm-hmm. Well, show us the documentation that shows that she actually is what she says she is, or the nominator says she is. She's alleged to have won many tournaments.
That must
have
been awesome.
Show us the documentation that
now
you say won those tournaments.
You say us. Who is us?
Us is the board of directors of the Chautauqua Sports
Hall of Fame. The board of directors first.
There are 30 members on our board of directors, and those 30 people are the voters.
Now, when they say, okay, who does it go to then? Do they narrow it down?
Okay, well, you're really getting into the weeds, but I would be happy to explain how it works. So, once we receive a nomination from the public and it has been approved as complete, meaning it has everything we need, then that file goes into the hopper, so to speak. Right now we have about 100 files in the hopper. So what we do is we take our board of directors and we divide ourselves in half. So 15 members will go through the entire hopper of all 100 files, and their job is to attempt to narrow that down to maybe 25 or 30 of the most qualified.
Wow.
Now the other half of the board, the other 15 people, will look at those 25 to 30 files and attempt to narrow it down even more, maybe to 10 to 15.
Wow.
Then the entire group reconvenes and looks at that 10 to 15 and makes the final decision on which people are going to be inducted that particular year or which ones have to go back into the hopper to be considered in a future year.
Now, I know all of that is work by volunteers.
Yes.
And how many hours do they put into just to select?
It takes us about 3 months.
3 months.
To go through the process to start with 100 nominations and get it down to the final, say, 10. We take this job very seriously.
Yes.
It's the hardest thing that we do.
Now,
at the Sports Hall of Fame.
And after they're selected and they're inducted, what happens? Do you hang something on the wall down there?
Well, we do a lot of things. First of all, we build a website for every one of our inductees. So you can go to ChautauquaSportsHallOfFame.org and you will find a web page devoted totally to Christina. Photographs of her, publications about her, videos about her, memorabilia. Because once she has been notified she has been an inductee, then we start asking her for all her memorabilia, all her scrapbooks, all her stuff. And then she supplies them to us.
You're
we scan
have to get
them,
room
we put it
there.
Up. And you, I'm certain you know that you have a web page at the Chautauqua Sports Hall of Fame as well, Russ, that has, to the best of our ability, the story of your athletic career in this county, yeah, which is
that web page is on the other side of somebody else's webpage.
Well, that's a big website when it comes to Russ Dietrich.
Randy, some of the members in the past or future members, they don't necessarily have to be athletes, correct?
No, we induct athletes, coaches, officials, sports media, volunteers.
Yes.
Anybody, because you need all those pieces, Andrew, to put sports together.
Correct.
You can't have a game without athletes, coaches, and officials. Mm-hmm. You probably can't organize a team without volunteers, fundraisers, people who are behind the scenes, and you certainly can't tell about those games without media people.
Right.
Every one of those components is critical to the sports history of our county, and we take great pride in inducting people from all those disciplines.
One of the other that is so important and that you're talking about the group, I think, are the fans. Are there a lot of fans when you have the competition, a lot of people, cheerleaders in the stands, or what?
That's an understatement. It gets very loud. So when you're trying to ref and judge and hear, like, the competitors, you know, and all that, it's sometimes deafening. Mm. So, yes, majority of the people in the stands are like family or friends of, you know, the people competing. I know next month I'm supposed to compete at the World Championships again to defend my title.
Wow.
So, and I got a friend going with me, and I got a couple of students going with me to observe.
Where's that going to be, Christina?
Columbus, Ohio, at the Convention Center.
Columbus, Ohio.
Or what's the address?
I don't know the address off the top of my head. Sorry.
So when they're training and practicing, especially at the younger ages, I guess, when they're doing the training in the gyms and such, or the studios, are they pumping, you know, noise in there to try to get? Because I know, like, some of the sports will do that sometimes. Like some of the NFL teams, especially when they're on the road in a very noisy environment, they'll practice with piped in audio sound, like of the cheering and the taunting. Do they do that in karate? Or is, I mean, because there's a lot, so much focus in that sport.
It all depends, I guess, on the instructor. There's been times where I will sometimes have fun with the kids and all that, especially the juniors.
You have an air horn that can that you
and no, I'll turn on,
there's,
you know,
my idea.
I'll turn on, you know, something, some song or something. Or what I like to do with my junior class is, if they do really well during class time, we have a little bit of downtime where we'll play a couple of games or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I mean, I have a couple of 4-year-olds in my class right now and a 5-year-old.
Oh, wow.
So it's like, okay, you want them to know that there's a time to be serious and then there's a time to just let it all out,
mm-hmm.
you know. And everything that I do in my class, even if it's a game,
mm-hmm.
there's a lesson behind it. Mm-hmm. It could be, you know, a coordination lesson. It could be an endurance, you know, thing or whatever. And I'll even get the parents involved.
Yeah.
And the parents I have currently are so awesome to participate with their kids. I'm so happy. So thank you, parents.
That's great.
Christina, something that's not clear to me is, how does someone advance from belt to belt to belt? Is there a test, a physical test, a written test? How does one achieve the next level?
Well, in order to achieve a next rank in martial arts, in my system, you have to be able to know sufficiently enough for yourself, and everybody's got different abilities, your basics, your kata, your routines, whatever it may be, in order to qualify to test. So then you go before myself and maybe some other black belts that I have with me and perform what you know on your own without any assistance from a black belt.
Wow.
So, and then we determine whether you pass or fail your test. And when you get up to black belt level, yes, there are written exams.
Wow.
So, because with a written exam, it's basically to, putting it nicely, to weed out who might be a hothead at that level. You know, the questions are really significant on, you know, how you would discipline somebody if they're misbehaving in class, how you would run a class, things like that. And we go by your answers to see whether or not you're going to be qualified to actually become a black belt and eventually be certified to instruct a class. We want to make sure that you know how to properly discipline somebody, and that by age, gender, belt level, things are different. You're not going to discipline a five-year-old like you would discipline an adult. So age brackets come in factor. Their different ranks come in factor.
Can you lose certification, lose a belt?
I've known in the past, there's been times where people have been demoted. Uh-huh. It's more because they're arrogant or hotheads, or they're using their what they've learned to basically bully and intimidate people. Mm. So I've only done that once. Mm-hmm. I've told a student, I'm sorry, I can no longer train you or anything like that, because that student, I'm not going to name a name, was into things that I will not promote.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, I've given that student multiple opportunities to fix the behavior.
Right.
And, you know, they couldn't fix it. So it's like, I'm sorry, you know, I mean, I don't know what else more to do.
So character matters.
Character does matter. And when you're an instructor and you have a student do something, that can sometimes also reflect on the instructor.
Sure.
So if I have a student who I train that's going out and intimidating or bullying somebody, and that's not what you actually tell them to do or you actually have taught them to do, and they're doing that, you have to correct that immediately because it does represent you.
Can I ask you this? The world's changed. Things have changed a lot, especially when it comes to coaching and athletics. Kids today, they're more sensitive, and maybe it's because the world's changed and, you know, you're not allowed to yell at them. You're not allowed to touch them. But in your sport, I mean, your job is to be that, you know, stereotypical karate martial arts instructor where it's almost like a drill sergeant. How do you know? All right. You fix that because I want to take care of any of that. But how do you handle it when a child looks at you and just starts crying?
Well, a martial arts instructor has to wear multiple hats.
Uh-huh.
There's times where we're not just the instructor, but we have to be the friend, the mother, the father, you know, the teacher. You know, I've had children cry in my class. I'm not going to deny that.
Yeah.
Because sometimes maybe they're intimidated, they're scared, you know, they're shy.
They're just getting it.
Yeah. You know, they get frustrated, things like that. But then it's like, okay, you know, you go over, you try to talk to them, try to reassure them. You try to encourage. I like to do things within my class where we have an award thing. Mm. You know, like right now, if a student has like a belt on and they have a black stripe around their belt, that represents that they're the leaders of my class. Mm. They're the students that you can go up to help. They're the people that are showing like, okay, you know, the discipline factor. They're willing to, you know, help a student that's new. You know, because sometimes peer-to-peer works better than adult to, you know, mm-hmm. child, because that student feels more comfortable with somebody around their own age.
Do you go to the coaches and the dojos, do they decide to open their dojo, open their, you know, their class? Do they go through training to do that somewhere? Or is it just kind of, I'm going to do my own thing because I learned, you know, and I'm just going to do it? Or is there something that they can model after, like a training program or something?
Well, I mean, there are training programs out there, but it all depends on the person themselves, what they want to do.
Okay.
I mean, after I got certified, I always thought about teaching. And there was times where I was assisting my instructor, helping out with class. And I just fell in love with it.
Hmm.
I mean, I love working with kids. You know, I do that all the time, working at Love School and working at the Boys and Girls Club. So that's my heart, is working with kids, but also I love working with adults. I will not turn anybody away.
Mm.
If you really seriously want to come and learn, I will teach you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if you're going to be somebody that I feel is going to try to use it for bullying or, you know, just being instructive, then I will not deal with that because I don't want somebody getting hurt.
I wrote down on my paper, you had talked about how you're going to be competing again, but you've had injuries before. And again, because it's radio and I know what people, you know, are interested in, worst injury that you've had?
Well, I guess that'd be two of them. I've had my knee popped out,
mm-hmm.
and I also had my eye socket and cheekbone fractured.
Holy cow.
Wow. And how did that happen? No, that had to be something that was done by mistake, I'm sure, by the other competitor, wouldn't I would hope.
That's a truth
silence.
Or dare. Honestly, it was cheap shots after the match was done.
Cool.
After it was done.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
Wow.
So what's your end game, Christina? You're 45, as you told us.
I will be.
We did not ask. On the record.
She volunteered that.
We did not ask.
Yeah, I probably should have said that.
You're instructing still, but you're still competing. You're still going for training with Rick Johnson in Warren. What's your end game? Where do you want to end up with this?
I really don't know. I love doing what I'm doing, but I also know that I've been doing it for nearly 40 years now, you know, martial arts itself, and eventually catches up with you.
That's all you've done.
So, yeah. But I love it. You know, it's my connection to my own personal family, especially my uncle. But there comes a time where you do know that sometimes you might just have to, you know, cut back on maybe competition for health reasons, mm-hmm. you know, and teaching. I'll probably do that until the day I can't do it anymore. You know, I love seeing my students succeed, not just, you know, in martial arts. I mean, I got a couple that are world champions
Christina,
in my class.
Really?
As I read the information that Randy has put together and listening here in the station this morning, how can you be, with all of this achievement, how can you be so humble? It is awesome.
Being humble is just, I guess, a state of mind. And, I mean, I've accomplished a lot, yes, but I've had, like, support of family and friends. And to be honest with you, my uncle was my biggest support ever, you know, up until the day that he took his last breath. Mm-hmm. And the last conversation I had with my uncle was right before one of the world championships that I had to go to. And it was tough. I mean, coming up through the ranks and everything, being a female, it was really hard. So my uncle would always tell me, don't let the guys get the best of you. You know, keep doing what you're doing. You deserve it. You belong, you know, you fit in, you know. And being a female, it is hard because there's sometimes different standards between genders. And I mean, I always, to this day, even though he's no longer here, I always go by what he told me. He had this thing, never give up, never back down, never surrender. Put your heart into everything you do, but always be humble and respectful because there's always somebody better than you. Mm. That's what it takes to equal one worthwhile black belt.
And he's listening this morning, too.
He's up in heaven, so I hope
yes,
so.
Yes, he is.
You know, but just because you earn certain ranks and just because you earn certain things in martial arts doesn't mean you have to be a high-head or arrogant. Mm-hmm. I mean, for that matter, look at, you know, Chuck Norris, Carlos Norris. You know, this is a guy who is well-known. I'm sure everybody listening even knows his name. You know, famous TV actor, martial artist, world champion, competitor, you know. But if you meet the guy, straight down Christian, very nice. I had the opportunity to meet him, you know, and he's just a down-to-earth guy. You know, he's really respectful and everything. I mean, a lot of the people that you see in the martial arts field on TV, Don the Dragon Wilson, all of them, you meet them, you know, face-to-face and all that. They treat you with respect. They treat you like your family. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's no greater person that I can respect right now than Grandmaster Che. You know, Supreme Grandmaster Che was a guy that overseen the World Championships, who just passed away last year. And this was a guy who I first met at fourth degree black belt, competing for the first time at his tournament. Did not know him. He came up to me after I got done performing for the first time, starts bowing at me. And he's in this suit and tie, and he kept saying, you good, you good. He takes off his lapel pin and puts it on my uniform. I did not know that lapel pin was significant. That was the first time that Grandmaster Che, the Ohio World Championships, combined with Arnold's Battle of Columbus. It was the first time Arnold Schwarzenegger combined his bodybuilding competition with the World Games. That was the first year in 2001. And those lapel pins were specifically made to the people that were running the event. And Grandmaster Che literally took his off and put it on a fourth degree black belt's uniform out of respect.
And may I borrow this, please? Would you please sign this? And what was your feeling when somebody asked you for your autograph the first time?
Honestly, I was taken back on that because I've had coworkers and some friends ask me, and it's like, okay, fine, but, you know, I'm just a normal person. You know, I've had, you know, love and support from people in my life, and, you know, and I just was fueled by, you know, wanting to accomplish certain things to honor my family.
Would you say that most of the people that have gotten into martial arts, it's because of that self-fulfillment, that they, it's not about chasing a trophy or a medal, because at that young age, they really don't know much about it. It's about creating oneself.
I couldn't really tell you, because every person's different and every person has their own reasons to get involved in martial arts. Some might want it for self-discipline, control. Some might want it for wellness, you know, because they want to lose body fat or weight or something like that. You know, some it might be just to learn how to protect themselves. Mm-hmm. Everybody has a different reason for joining.
I wrote down on my sheet, because this is the times of your life, and anybody who's ever listened knows that sometimes we promise there's going to be off-the-wall questions. What's your favorite food, Christina?
Oh, boy. My honestly favorite is, I guess, from my childhood, it's Hawaiian pizza, which is just ham and pineapple. So we used to eat that all the time as kids with my parents, and that was just the bomb. But as I got older, it was my foster mom's pierogies.
Oh, wow.
Love Nancy's pierogies.
Yeah. So did you ever...
That sounds like Honest John's out there.
Did you ever have to adopt, or was it like part of the stereotype that goes with, you know, martial arts, you know, the teas or the, you know, fish? And the rice, anything like that, or no, that never came along with the
No. I mean, I like rice and everything, but no, I eat basically, you know, what I want to and all that.
Christina, you've mentioned Love School a couple of times this morning. What's your connection to Love School? What do you do at Love School?
I'm actually a UPK 4 para with Pat Cunningham.
Oh, so awesome.
And I've been there for over 20 years. I love it. I love the people there. They're really good people, and I don't know what to say about them guys. I mean, they're very supportive and everything. I love school.
Yeah.
I love the Boys and Girls Club because, I mean, Diane, everybody there has been supportive.
I don't know if you're aware or not, but Ando's wife is in the teaching profession.
Yeah, she's over at Washington Middle School, fifth grade.
Hey, I was there as a kid.
Yeah.
Washington Lobo.
There you go. See, I mean,
as was I.
That's right.
You were there too.
Yeah.
CC
Ring. They wouldn't let me in.
Roadrunner and Washington Lobo.
How many, so all these awards and accolations, and as Randy said, you know, the scrapbooks and things like that, do you have a dedicated space in your home, and or are you now starting to have to rent out space to house all this stuff?
I have some of my most prestigious awards on my mom's former bookshelf that my Nancy Ackley put up for me. Uh-huh. You know, she kind of created that area and surrounding area. Uh-huh. But I do have some, like, put away in storage. Wow. Because I don't know what to do with them.
Right.
And I have had times where I continue to do. If my students, you know, show, like, you know, good grades, or they show certain things in class, they can actually receive one of my awards.
Randy, can I speak for you? If any of that you haven't decided, you don't know what to do with, and you don't know what's going to ever happen to it, please think of the Chautauqua Sports Hall of Fame.
Oh, I'm highly aware of that.
Christina, you're an eighth degree black belt. Is there anything more for you to apply? Can you become a ninth degree?
My instructor's ninth dan, and normally, traditionally, the head instructor has to be one degree higher than a student. So I really couldn't tell you. I know that sometimes an instructor can pass over the legacy to a student, but with him having multiple, you know, students that are eighth dan, you know, it all depends on what he chooses to do in life. So I really couldn't tell you.
Okay.
In 2020, you were inducted into the Universal Martial Arts Hall of Fame as the Woman of the Year. What was that like for you?
Surprising. You know, I mean, some of these people that see me compete and everything are the ones that start nominating me for things. And of course, my students themselves have nominated me for certain things too. And I'm grateful. You know, it's just humbling to, you know, see that how you teach and how you instruct and how you compete and how you carry yourself, you get recognized for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just personally, to me, being me. I'm not trying to act, you know, any different than who I am.
So when you're not competing, you're not training, you're not coaching, you're not working, what are you doing? And not eating Hawaiian pizza. Thank you, by the way, to our sponsor, Lena's Pizza, who does a great Hawaiian pizza.
Yeah, thank you, Jamie.
Yeah, yep. So what are you doing for fun? I mean, what are you doing for Christina keyboard time?
Wow, when I'm not working or doing anything, I hang out with my foster families. I love them dearly. And I want to say I kind of play with my turtles.
Hey.
What?
I have
Rocky
two,
Balboa head turtle.
I have two Red Deer sliders.
Okay.
So Feisty and Scooby. So I like to just, you know, get on the floor by their tank and I don't know.
Sure.
Do you have any
it's a zen
other,
for you?
Do you have any other hobbies?
Hobbies. Watching martial arts movies is one of my number one hobbies. You know, hanging out with family, you know, people that I love and care about. So that's basically
artwork or photography or anything like that. Do you have any of those?
Well, I will admit I love taking pictures. You know, I know somebody may be listening that could contest to that. So I get asked a lot to take pictures for, you know, people that I care about and all that and at school. And I love taking pictures, especially outdoor nature stuff. I love it.
Wonderful.
Christina, you've mentioned Rick Johnson and Daniel Genovese as being important people in your martial arts career. But previously, I've heard you mention the name Bob Service. Bob Service, retired Jamestown policeman.
Yes.
Tell me about his influence on your career.
Well, Bob was somebody I met as a child when he was working in law enforcement. He used to come over to the house a lot when there was things going on with my family. And Bob was somebody that always tried to keep my brother and my well-being in check. You know, helped us out a lot. Fought for us to get into a safe environment. And even though now I'm all grown up, Bob is still somebody that's always there for me.
Wow.
You know, I mean, he's a friend, he's a mentor, he's gone to a couple of my tournaments and cheered me on. He stood up for me multiple times. And with Bob, he's not like, you know, a friend anymore. He's more like family. You know, I've known him since I was a little kid and he's become family.
Have you kept a journal, a diary of all these accomplishments and your trips and your tournaments and your feelings and, you know, to get all that expression out in word form?
Well, I have like scrap albums and all that of like, you know, my accomplishments and everything. But I don't really keep what's called really a journal. It's kind of like a, you know, okay, an idea book or, you know, like, okay, yeah, this is where I've been. This is what, you know, happened there. I don't really, maybe it is called a journal, you know, but it's kind of like not thoughts and feelings, but it's more like, okay, yep, I met this person here at this event and I got to meet the former Bob Wall who just recently passed away. And Bob Wall was one of them that acted with Bruce Lee.
Okay.
And Enter the Dragon.
Oh, wow.
You know, so I got to meet him a couple of years back at a tournament and he introduced me to the World Black Belt Bureau. So I got to meet a lot of cool people. I got to meet the former George and Barbara Bush.
Wow.
You know?
That's cool.
It's been an amazing career. And it's just like, you don't know if you carry yourself a certain way and, you know, you're humble and the things that happen, it's just, you know, after hopefully COVID's done, I get to be part of the Martial Arts Kid 2 Payback movie.
Sure.
I'm excited about that.
That's great.
You know, and that's with Don the Dragon Wilson and Cynthia Rothrock.
Really?
You've been invited to appear in a movie?
Yes.
Tell us more.
Well, that's basically what it is. It's a movie that's going to take place maybe in, you know, California. It could be in, you know, Florida. We're not sure exactly where the location is going to be yet because there's going to be multiple. But it's called The Martial Arts Kid 2 Payback. It's on Facebook. It's basically, you know, a low-budget company where, you know, they get sponsors themselves and all that. But it does have major characters, like I said, Don the Dragon Wilson.
That's cool.
And Cynthia Rothrock. And these are people, Cynthia I have not met, but Don the Dragon Wilson I've met in person multiple times. And it's just, you know, they're looking for martial artists that, you know, just to do certain things. And
Randy, when and where does all this become public, the induction into the Sports Hall of Fame?
Well, so glad you asked that question, Ross.
I want to know for sure.
Yes.
As a listening audience wants to know.
Christina and the other 10 inductees that comprise the class of 2022 will be formally inducted at our 40th annual induction banquet, Ross. And it's on Monday, February 21st. At the Lakewood Rod and Gun Club.
Wonderful.
And tickets are still available, Russ.
Oh, wonderful. And how?
The best way to get them is to call our banquet chairman, Chip Johnson at 485-6991. Oh. They can also get tickets at the Chautauqua Sports Hall of Fame. But the easiest way is to just call Chip Johnson, 485-6991.
Now, if somebody is working on their budget, what is the price of a ticket for an individual?
They're $50.
$50, but it's a wonderful,
same price
wonderful
that it's been
night.
For as long as I can remember,
yeah,
Russ.
Awesome, awesome food and just marvelous.
It's a wonder. It's a wonderful night. I know you've been there many times. Yes. Andrew has been there. Certainly I have, and we're really excited that Christina's going to be there.
Christina, is your speech done?
What do you mean? Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, it's already turned in.
Yes.
Wait, what?
So we require our inductees to turn in a prepared speech ahead of time,
yeah.
Andrew.
Yeah, okay.
And for a couple of reasons. One is we print those speeches in our induction book so that there's a permanent record of what that person is saying. But another reason is that when our inductees get to the microphone, we want them to be focused.
Yes.
We want them to have their game plan in place so that they get up there and they stick to the script, so to speak.
Well, I have a plan.
And don't get off the rails.
I have a plan that if you're looking for focus, Christina is going to be focused. She has that experience of focus.
Oh, no question. And I just want to say, you know, I think a lot of us, when we think about martial arts and that whole discipline, and we see stuff on TV like mixed martial artists mm-hmm. and fighting and cage fighting and all of that, I think that can be a little intimidating when you think about who are those people. They
sure.
got to be really some bad people. But take a look at this.
Yeah.
This person is so kind, so humble. Think what she's accomplished for herself, for her family, and for a total stranger
right.
that she gave up a kidney for. Mm. This is not a bad person.
No.
This is a good person.
Before we run out of time, as we're creeping by, will either one of you do a favor for me?
What's that?
No, what's it going to cost
for you? Or you? Which one? I want to see her. Come her in action. Will one of you please call her Chris?
Chris, I'm fine with. Chrissy, the only one that called me that was an aunt. And
you do that at the banquet in front of everybody where she has a crowd.
Who does it at the banquet?
No, I'm not doing it. Hey, Randy, we are out of time, but I'm making enough time for you. Just run down really quick for us the other worthy of amazing people. Some are still with us, some are not, that are going to be inducted along with Christina at the Chautauqua Sports Hall of Fame.
Okay. Well, we'll be inducting the late George Barone. We'll be inducting Sarah Bogardus Burnett, Andrew Krieger, the late Harry Carlson, the late Larry Rogers, the late Richard Sherman, Mike Sirianni, Lewis Mack, and Mark Tremuda.
Did you leave one out?
That's pardon me?
Did you leave one out, Randy?
Well, I might have left out another
Russ,
guy.
I think there was another guy that's supposed to be...
Or the middle initial, G is...
Well, I left out my own name,
G,
Andrew.
What's that G stand for?
Gerald.
Gerald.
Randall Gerald Anderson.
Oh, that's you.
Oh,
that's me. Oh, congratulations.
Well, I'd rather not talk about myself. I'd rather talk about Christina.
Right. Long overdue. Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, folks, if you want to get tickets, call Chip Johnson, 485-6991, 485-6991. It is the Chautauqua Sports Hall of Fame. And Randy, thank you as always for everything you do.
Oh, thank you.
We know you, speaking of humble and kind, you've done so much work and... you know, none of this is possible without your efforts and your team's efforts, because I know you're a team player. So thank you. And Christina, thank you for carving out the time today. Christina, keyboard inductee of the Chautauqua Sports Hall of Fame. I think I can speak for us, Russ, when I say I've learned a lot.
I would just say from Christina, thank you for touching the lives of so many young people. And it will go on and on. And the remarkable thing, the lives that you have touched sometime down the road, those lies will touch the life of other young people. So thank you for building that foundation.
Thank you.
This is the Times of Your Life. I'm Andrew Hill.
I wished I was.
And we'll see you next week right here on 101.3 and 1240 WJTN Jamestown.